All right, we're going to call to order the Security Committee. May I have the roll call, please?
Chair McMichael?
Here.
Vice Chair Boylan?
Here.
Regent Brager?
Here.
Regent Brown?
Here.
Regent Carvalho? Regent Downs?
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. We will move to item one, public comment. For those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 928-4944-5069. And passcode 555555. We will take public comment from the meeting sites first. Is there any public comment from Elko?
No, sir.
Thank you. Is there any public comment from Systems Administration Las Vegas?
No public comment in Las Vegas.
Thank you. Is there any public comment here at TMCC? Hearing none. Is there any for the SCS, is there any public comment in the phone queue?
Not at this time.
Thank you. We will now move on to item number two for possible action, the minutes. For March 9th, 2023. Do I hear a motion?
Motion
to approve by Regent Brager. Do I hear a second?
Second.
I hear a second. It was that Regent Del Carlo? Oh, I'm sorry. Regent Brown. Thank you. Are there any comments? All right, then we'll have a voice vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, we will move on to the motion passes. We will now move on to item number three, Chair's report. This is information only. I wish to thank Chief Adams and Chief James, Eric James, as well as Dr. Milkovic for being here. And that is all I have for the Chair's report. Thank you. We will move on to item number four, NCHI Southern Command, and this is information only. Chief Adam Garcia, would you please come to the podium? Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair McMichael, Vice Chair Boylan, committee members, regents, Chancellor Charlton, presidents, colleagues, and students. For the record, my name is Adam Garcia, Vice President of Public Safety Services and Director of University Police Southern Command. I will be providing a brief presentation on the ongoing activities at the department since our last meeting. To begin with, members of the department have continued to contribute considerable amount of effort in foot patrol hours for all of our four institutions in the South. Year to date, sworn officers as well as members of the Community Service Officer Program have provided 337 hours of foot patrol at CSN Henderson, 488 hours at CSN North Las Vegas, and 537 hours at the West Charleston campus. At UNLV and DRI, officers provided 1,023 foot patrol hours, 405 hours at the medical district, and 252 hours at our nation's newest university, Nevada State University. Year to date, the department has responded to or took part in a total of 1,028 reported crimes. These numbers are not reflective of all of our calls for service, which we will cover in the next slide, but they do include a wide variety of offenses, including sick and injured people, warrant arrests, missing or found property, thefts, stolen vehicles, threats, sexual-related offenses, traffic violations, weapons violations, trespassing, and other offenses that are not shown in this slide. Overall, calls for service is reflected in this slide. To our service area has remained relatively stable during this reporting period. When we compare it to the same time frame in 2022, January and March showed a slight decrease. February, a slight increase, no change in April, and significant decreases in calls for service for May and June as compared to 2022. The data shows an aggregate of 22,597 calls for service for this period, which is an 8% decrease in dispatch activity for this reporting period. The total dispatch activity showed the busiest month for 2023 year to date so far was January with 4,167 calls. As it relates to safety initiatives, safety walks have been completed at UNLV and Nevada State University, with safety walks currently being scheduled for this fall at all three CSN campuses and the medical district. Other initiatives the department is working on or in the process of is investment of approximately $700,000 over the next 5 years for replacement of all officer-assigned body-worn cameras in order to provide capabilities, increase hardware resilience, and meet statutory requirements. In addition, $500,000 has been allocated to renew the UNLV video management system hardware. This will help support current and future physical security initiatives. The Medical District Shadow Lane substation remodel, which I've discussed at previous committee meetings, is expected to be completed in December of this year, and I hope to have an open house to which this committee and the full board will be invited to attend. Working with our partners at the Department of Homeland Security, a physical security assessment and infrastructure visualization platform, or IVP, was completed at Thomas and Mack and the Fertitta football complex for the upcoming scheduled Super Bowl in 2024. In addition, during this reporting period, I visited Wayne State University and the Detroit Police Department's Criminal Intelligence Unit to view firsthand best practices in cooperative policing between a university, which is similarly situated as UNLV, in an urban core area with a medical district, casinos, and major sports venues nearby. The visit has actually got me thinking of a crime analysis unit which we could work with our regional partners at tracking crime for all of our institutions. The department has escalated our outreach efforts during this reporting period. A small example of what we've done includes donuts with dogs, Jane Jiu-Jitsu and self-defense, pizza with the police, and coffee with the cop. As we move into the fall semester, we have scheduled pizza with the police at all four institutions in October on 3 days, coffee with the cop on 3 separate days in October, Jane Jiu-Jitsu self-defense classes next week and additional trainings next month and again in November and December. Finally, the campus favorite, donuts with dogs, at all four institutions in November over a 3-day period. The department continues to support our law enforcement partners on a variety and numerous visits of political events during this reporting period. As the nation moves into the next political season, we're seeing an escalation of events. We are working closely with the Secret Service, Metro, and our other Valley partners. The department is not only providing support when it is requested, but we're also receiving support as it is needed, and we will need it. We anticipate that the frequency for such visits will pick up as the February primary election inches forward and the November 2024 general election approaches. The department hosted the 2023 Campus Safety Conference held in July at the M Resort. The 2.5-day conference brought together campus security, public safety, and emergency management officials from throughout the nation and provided previews of emerging technology programs that are being implemented at other college and university campuses. As host, I provided a welcome to the attendees, and the department's honor guard posted colors during the opening ceremonies. The department is also scheduled to host Cleary training next month on the campus of UNLV at Thomas and Mack. For those of you new to the committee, the Cleary Act was established in Section 45 of the Higher Education Act of 1965. It requires institutions of higher education who receive student financial assistance programs to disclose campus crime statistics and security information. The Cleary Act also requires institutions to do a number of things. First of all, provide timely warnings to campus communities of certain crimes or events that represent a possible threat to students and employees, and to maintain a log of crimes reported to campus police. These requirements are a complement and supports the importance of clearly delineating the responsibilities of individuals involved during an emergency response, the need to develop and implement notification and communication strategies to share information with our campus communities, the importance of testing and practicing a higher education emergency operations plan, and the importance of keeping the community informed of current policies and procedures. It is expected that institutions from throughout the country will attend this training at UNLV. In addition to the three current explosive dogs that we have on the department, we have selected two members of UPD who will attend training through the Paws and Stripes College with the Brevard County Sheriff's Office in Titusville, Florida. The nationally recognized program will provide therapy dogs and all of the training required at no cost to the department. The 40-hour training course provides training in the deployment of a security dog that will help crime victims, including children, helps veterans and first responders suffering from anxiety disorders, and makes available to our campus students, faculty, and staff who may be in need of an animal-assisted comfort. Once training is completed, the handler and the dog become certified in registered therapy teams throughout the nation. The best part of the program, at least to me, is that all of the dogs in the program were at one time at risk of being euthanized. In addition, the dogs are trained in voice commands, hand signals, are pulse broken, have basic obedience skills, including healing, sitting, down, stay, and come. All of this trained by inmates at the Brevard County Jail. They are carefully selected, and they are trained inmates. And this trade helps assist them when they reenter back into society. And this is at no cost to the department, the taxpayers, or our campuses. As we move forward with this program, I wanted to publicly thank both Brevard County Sheriff Wayne Ivey and his awesome staff for their help in selecting our two new handlers and our future campus therapy dogs. Earlier this year, I was nominated to the Nevada Police Foundation, and I will represent ENSHE as a foundation board member. The foundation supports law enforcement officers and their families in times of need, such as the death of an officer and subsequent assistance to the family, or other major incidents that result in financial burdens to the officer's family. The foundation has taken an active role in supporting the family of Pyramid Lake Tribal Officer Anthony Forconi, who was killed in line of duty on Friday, August 25th, and whose memorial service will take place this Saturday at Greater Nevada Field in Reno. The department will be attending and taking part in that memorial service as well. Like many governmental law enforcement agencies, the department continues to struggle to address unhoused issues. To that point, the department's Homeless Outreach and Protective Engagement Unit, or HOPE Unit, continues its work with the primary goal to offer assistance and resources to those who are unhoused and may be dealing with other issues such as food insecurity, substance abuse, or mental health crisis. HOPE team members are proactive in dealing with our unhoused community and in an effort to lower the number of individuals requiring law enforcement intervention while establishing relationships and building trust and respect with the community. The team consists of two members, Sergeant Ryan Willman and Officer Darren Franklin, who work closely and collaborate with other local agency teams and resources. In addition, the department in June of this year, under the leadership of Assistant Director Jessica Moore, has established a CSN Homeless Task Force. The task force consists of representatives from University Police Services, CSN General Counsel, Academic Affairs, Human Resources, Faculty, Facilities Management, and all with an ultimate goal of bringing together a cross-section of the CSN community that can help us collaborate and make changes to better address homeless issues on CSN campuses. President Whitfield and I have been discussing ways in which the university can also play a leadership role in dealing with unhoused issues across the Las Vegas Valley by bringing together key stakeholders from the university, the city of Las Vegas, North Las Vegas and Henderson, Clark County, mental health and medical professionals, the courts, law enforcement, and private businesses. We aren't sure yet what this is going to look like, but more will be shared with you by President Whitfield as this initiative develops. As the department continues to mature since the 2019 consolidation, University Police Services recently established a new position, an Assistant General Counsel for University Police Legal Matters, and added to the emergency manager duties coordination of threat assessment protocols. Dr. Louise Hardy was hired in July to the position of Assistant Director for Emergency Management and Threat Assessment. Dr. Hardy joins the department from South Carolina, where she had 12 years of experience in serving in various roles to include patrol supervisor, detective, community relations officer, victim advocate, instructor, and accreditation manager, as well as emergency manager. In that position, she assisted in the development of emergency operations plans for the city of Isle of Palms. This position will obviously oversee our emergency management programs. However, a new piece to this position is threat assessment. Threat assessment programs are designed to communicate, to address communications that raises concern that a person or a situation may pose a threat to the safety of one of our campuses. I should note that within 30 days of her appointment, Dr. Hardy was instrumental in the department's response to the remnants of Hurricane Hillary, which caused flooding and other issues in the Las Vegas region. In consultation and coordination with UNLV General Counsel Elda Sadu, Eddie Gilborkian has joined the department to assist in police-related legal matters. Eddie has experience as a practicing attorney in Nevada for over 20 years, including with the Nevada Attorney General's Office, where he served the Department of Corrections. In this role, he was successful in establishing new case law on the duty of prison officials to protect incarcerated persons from attacks by others as well as served as a prosecutor for the Attorney General's Office Bureau of Consumer Protection, prosecuting cases involving deceptive trade practices and security fraud. The Southern Desert Regional Police Academy graduated 15 recruits from throughout Southern Nevada in June and included two UPD recruits and the others that you see on the screen. The keynote address was delivered by Nevada Attorney General Aaron Ford and attended by families, friends, and partner agencies from state, local, and federal law enforcement departments, as well as Chair McMichael, of whom I am highly appreciative of your continued support. The current academy is our largest yet with 24 recruits, and it is anticipated that the January academy will be bigger yet. Because of the continued growth of the academy, CSN, community leaders, and the Nevada Public Works Board are in the initial planning stages for construction of the CSN Center of Excellence in Public Safety, which will include a state-of-the-art police training academy building and other public safety training components. As co-chair of the user group, along with Dr. James McCoy, we have begun meeting with public safety partners from the region to seek their input. I am grateful to Governor Lombardo and the legislature for their support that we received to move the planning of this facility forward. The Center of Excellence in the Police Academy, which will be located on 66 acres at the CSN Northwest campus location. President Zaragoza will continue to provide updates to the board as we move this project forward. Finally, I wanted to provide the committee an update to our continued difficulty in recruiting. In March 2021, I strategically hired Kelly Sherrato, a senior human resources business partner, to help provide direct support to UPD in areas such as recruitment, performance management, employee relations, and other HR-related functions. Since then, we've exponentially increased our hires year over year, but that's not good enough. Given the ebb and flow of employees, not only being hired, but then leaving to seek other positions with other agencies. In previous presentations to this board, I have outlined many of the challenges related to hiring and retaining law enforcement positions. Those impacts still exist and continue to create barriers in hiring and retaining talented police officers. These are indeed very challenging times for law enforcement, and it calls for innovative, resourceful, and immediate solutions. Given these issues, I wanted to inform the committee that we are in the process of contracting with a firm for a 60-day project to support us in filling up to 35 positions. The firm will recruit and provide fully vetted recruits. The recruitment process outsourcing solution will allow us to hire top talent within and outside our geographical location. The firm acts as an extension of our hiring and recruitment team, also known as the HART team. By adopting and customizing their technology to our processes with an internal database of 25 million candidates, they design communication strategies based on facts and figures, and their specialized technology will locate and return matches that align with my department's needs with a team of specialists, researchers, screeners, recruiters, and advertising coordinators. By partnering with this firm, the department will get access to a larger volume of qualified and interested candidates immediately, along with support to increase communication and interactions with those who apply with the department. In turn, we will be able to cut the hiring process from months to weeks, and in some cases, even days. This will put us on track to have the majority of our positions filled, if not all of them, within 6 or 12 months. I hope you're listening. 6 to 12 months. My original goal when I spoke to this committee was it was going to take a decade for us to fully fill all of our positions. This firm, by the way, is guaranteed that they will fill all 35 positions in the next 6 to 12 months. In conclusion, I wanted to thank Board Chair Brooks, Committee Chair McMichael, as well as the committee, Chancellor Charlton, the board, all of the four great presidents I serve, and our students and faculty for your unwavering and continued support as the department continues to strive to reach the goal of becoming the best in the nation. With that, I'm open to any questions.
Yes, I would like to thank you for your presentation and congratulate you on being selected for the Nevada Police Foundation Board of Directors. I'm believing that they will have made the best decision in selecting you. And with that, are there any questions? Regent Del Carlo?
Thank you, Chair McMichael. I'm not on this committee, I don't think, but the slide on the University Police Service Academy graduation, that doesn't feed your need for employees, or is that something different? I'm a little confused.
Well, the academy is simply a training program. So when we hire an individual that has not received their post-certification through the state of Nevada, we have to send them to an academy someplace. This academy is a CSN program of which I am serving as the interim director for this period of time. And so that's where we send our folks to be trained, unless they already come to us trained, in which case then we can move them forward in the process, put them in the field training program much sooner. Currently, the academy is 22 weeks in length. By the time they complete their initial 22 weeks, they undergo another 16 weeks of field training. So by the time when we hire somebody, when somebody applies for a position and they hit the streets by themselves, it's about a year.
Okay. So 20, you said 22 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. And so do these, like June, you had 15 graduates. Did they go in then and fill positions?
No. So this is a regional concept. Okay. And so the list of agencies that you saw on the screen, those are the participating agencies who sent folks to our academy. So once they graduated from the academy, they went back to their home department. We had two in that academy.
Okay, so, and there's other academies, obviously, where they can choose to go.
Well, no. We send them to the academy, so we choose which academy they go to.
Okay.
Currently, this is the only regional academy in Southern Nevada.
Oh.
So if you get hired by Metro, you go to the Metro Academy. If you get hired by North Las Vegas, you go to their academy. If, let's say, the 8th Judicial Court or the city of Las Vegas hires somebody, they send them to the regional academy because they don't have their own academy.
Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Thank you. Is there any additional questions? Regent Downs.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair McMichael. Regent Downs for the record. So you mentioned the, I'm looking at the graphic now, of the calls for service and how it's declined, which is a good thing. What are the nature of most of the calls that you see? I mean, are they small things, big things? What do people typically call about?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. Typically, most of our calls for service are service calls. And suspicious people, thefts, we typically don't rise much beyond that, knock on wood, but we do have those incidents in which there are crimes that we see in other places take place. The vast majority of our calls are calls to service, which include escorts, which include checking buildings, those kinds of things. So the 22,000 calls to service that you saw on there is everything from a traffic stop to an escort to, you know, you name it, everything that we've had.
Does the UNLV or Southern Command services, do they also answer community calls outside of the university and she needs?
Well, we respond to calls to service when we're requested by another agency. We have memorandums of understanding in which we support them when they need us to respond to calls to service on their behalf. That doesn't happen a lot in Southern Command, but it does happen.
So would that be included in these figures?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Are there any other questions? Yes, Regent Brown.
Thank you, Chair. Regent Brown, for the record. First, I just want to say, I think you're downplaying the Academy. It sounds really cool, and the fact that you have a regional approach to it, I think that should be celebrated. So I just wanted to highlight that, because I know you're being modest, but it sounds really cool. Second thing, I had like an NCHE week. I was on an institution every single day last week. I'm not complaining. I loved it. I'm just saying I got to know some of your officers, and you know they're bouncing around between all the campuses, and I know that's the model and the approach. I just got to thinking, I was like, well, do each of these officers know the facility as well as if it was just their home base? And so I just wanted to ask, like, are there standard procedures or, you know, mappings of campuses that they have to learn and know? Is there any type of, like, onboarding when they're assigned to a campus maybe they're not super familiar with? It came across my mind last week when I was seeing the same guys at all the different campuses.
Absolutely. Adam Garcia, for the record. They are assigned to different commands. So we have a regional command and a central command. The central command consists of basically UNLV and DRI. So that's our biggest footprint when it comes to special events, to traffic, to other kinds of issues. And the regional command includes CSN, Nevada State University, and those other areas throughout the county or the city. And to the extent that we can, we assign them to specific areas so that they learn the geography of each campus. However, because they get to bounce, as you call it, from campus to campus, they then learn the layout and the geography of each area for which they are ultimately responsible for. So they can respond to a call for service to any institution, and they know where everything is. And part of the training process I talked a few minutes ago, the Post Academy is a 22-week program that teaches them in the basics of policing. The additional 16 weeks of on-the-job training, the field training program, introduces them to how we want them to act as police officers on our campus. With community-oriented policing model, that's what we strive for. And a huge part of that training component during those 16 weeks is geography. So they get to know where each campus is, what's in each campus, where the buildings are. So they're very familiar with those areas. You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chief Garcia. If there's no other questions, we will move on to item number 5. NCHE Northern Command, and this is information only. And this is by Eric James, Chief of Police, Northern Command.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Eric James. I'm the University Police Chief at the University Police Department, Northern Command. I serve 5 fantastic presidents in Northern Nevada, and today is an opportunity for us to kind of highlight some of the great things that we do here in Northern Nevada. I'm going to push this, right? Okay, good. So I wanted to start off something a little bit different. We always sort of bore you, and not bore you, but always give you, here's our calls for service and things. So one of the things I want to change up a little bit was I wanted to show you the amounts of citizen contacts that we had. So in 2022, we had 29,495 total contacts. Of those, we had 4,273 that were dispatched specifically for individuals. So these aren't crimes. These are just individuals that we were called for whatever reason. And so when we look at our total uses of force for 2022, we had 14 uses of force with all of those contacts, which means that we had a 99.95% chance of ending without a use of force, which is fantastic. That also means that 99.96 ended without a use of force when we look at our computer automated dispatch system as well. And so When we say to you that our officers are out there doing their job every single day, that's the proof in the pudding that we are out there doing our job every single day and making a difference every single day. So what are some of the great things that we've been doing? Well, the University Police Department, Northern Command, Thanks to the generosity of President Sandoval and his office, we were able to get two Purple Heart parking spots for the university. One will be in the Brian Whalen parking garage, and the other will be down in the new Gateway Plaza parking garage. We worked very closely with the Veterans Resource Center, John Pratt and Chai. They were fantastic. And I just can't say enough about our veterans on campus. They're amazing because I am part of the Veterans Resource Team as well. And what we do is we move out and we try to help and we assist not only students, but students, faculty, and staff that are veterans and say, how can we help you? And so we, as you can see in that upper right-hand corner, however you're looking at it, we designed a pin. So we have this unique pin that we have that we worked with Marcom with. And we're really proud of some of the work that we've been doing, being able to really get in and have some touch points with some of our veterans, which is great. Our SafePack app, which we have at UNR, pushed out to all the new iPads. That is amazing, which means that currently we have 11,456 subscribers to our SafePack app at the University of Adorino. And I'm super proud of that. And that was all an initiative done with OIT and us working together. We have some great collaborative efforts going on. We have an eyewitness identification research protocol. Every year they ask us if they can utilize our station. We say, certainly. And what they do, we have students come in and basically they bring other students in. They wear little lab coats and they bring them in and they say, what did you see with this particular scenario? And they take notes and they're working to show, probably to show that eyewitness accounts aren't exactly what we seem to think that they are. And it's really unique, though, because the students get an opportunity to come in, work inside of our station, sort of move freely, and do the research inside the station. So it's really twofold for us. And then lastly, we kind of helped out with the residential life. They had a DEI study. So I went over there and answered probably 2 hours worth of questions, sort of helping them with their study to assist and say, this is what we do for the residential life on campus up at the university. But we're not done yet. What are some of the other things we've done? Well, we had our first annual barbecue kickoff. Needless to say, Tanya Wells, my assistant, her husband came out and cooked hot dogs and hamburgers for us. So we really appreciated that. We also are still working on and we're still moving forward with our officers and staff because we received training in that police to peace initiative that we're working through that included internal and external community members and having surveys done. We're exploring opportunities to incorporate drones into our operation. We are looking at new equipment. We actually, some of you may know Todd Renwick. That name may be familiar with some of you. One of our officers was sitting down one day, and Todd was like, yeah, we're going to be getting rid of this because he's working for athletics now. And he's like, we said, well, hold on a second. Called WNC and said, hey, could y'all use some equipment? They said, yeah, absolutely. And they came up and picked up the equipment. So we kind of worked hand in hand and gave them some of that old equipment that they could use down at their campus. And so, again, those partnerships are amazing. And then lastly, we finally completed our installation of our Avalon camera system. We replaced our old system, which was probably 19, 20 years old. Finally replaced it with a very cutting-edge system that is also going to be hopefully rolled out to some other campuses as well, but it puts everything into place. And I got to tell you, since we've done this, the amount of video and the amount of images we have from our officers and CSOs sitting down and reviewing it is phenomenal. We have gotten so many good leads and arrests based off of that. I am so proud of them for the efforts that they've been putting forward. One of the things that we really work closely with is that human exploitation and trafficking team, the HEAT team. And so here are some of the operations that we worked in 2023. We did a sugar daddy operation. We had one day where we had five arrests. We did a Las Vegas operation. The detective actually came down here. Some of you may have heard the some of the local news down in Las Vegas where there was actually an agent that was knew about the operation and was arrested down in Las Vegas for that operation. But that was a two-day, those preying on juveniles, and four detectives, we sent them down there. Our June operation was targeted sex purchasing and then targeting juveniles. We did 12 arrests, 36 total charges with 32 felonies and four misdemeanors. This is getting all these people off the street. And then you can see the 2023 totals for January and June, arrests 83, juvenile recoveries. So they do what they call hug ops. They have individuals come to the place, and they basically bring them in and say, you're not making the best choices right now. And they actually hug them and say, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to help you get out of that system. And so they have been very, very good at that. What we see up here is we see that all of our institutions are seeing this. And so one thing that we're trying to make sure is we're helping especially our students get out of this, and it's been very successful. In April and June, 81 victims served, 29 outreach activities, 184 investigations, which, by the way, is 184 investigations, too many if you ask me, and then 66 arrests, and then 27 cases actually closed. Locally up here just yesterday, you may have seen the FBI raided a gynecologist here in Nevada. That team played a huge part in that, so I'm super proud of them. Some of the outreach things that we do are orientation and partnering on campus. Madison Effort, she is fantastic. She did every single orientation, and she had the former president of the ASUN, Dion Sanfield, help her there the entire time. She put together some very unique outreach programs that students, I have never seen students interact like this, and it was phenomenal. I was so proud of them. They did that for every single orientation on campus from beginning to end. And yes, they were tired, but they did an amazing job. We continue to teach self-defense classes. In fact, two of my instructors are standing right back there, Sergeant Dave Olson and Officer Robin Wasser. They teach the Girls on Guard program right now. They're actually going out to do RAD training next week so they can be dual certified. But just some of the classes that we did were for residential life. There were Latino Student Advisory Board, one of their advisory board members worked for our department as a student worker, and she said, can you come do this? We said, absolutely, we're there. TMCC Counseling Center, the UNR Health Center, et cetera. We still provide a PEX class every Wednesday from 7 to 9 where we do a drop. It's a one-credit class, but we also do, Robin teaches every Wednesday and Monday. She's doing Girls on Guard drop-in classes at weekend. And so we're just really trying to get out there as much as we can for that sort of thing. Active shooter response and personal safety classes, WNC facilities, Student Athlete Advisory Committee, the Financial Aid Office, the College of Science, TMCC Classified Employees Council. Last night I did one for the leadership of the ASUN, the SEC, the Faculty Senate, and the GSA. Went for about an hour and 20 minutes. We had a great conversation about it. What we're hoping for is that then they'll turn around and go talk to their individuals and say, hey, you need to get this training. And so we're really trying to make sure we're getting in different ways. But we continue to do our workplace active shooter response. I would like to tell you that we wouldn't have to do it, but unfortunately we do have to do it. I've got one scheduled for beginning of October, specifically with DRI. And so we're always trying to reach out and make sure we're getting these things done. Oops. Okay, so we participated in Dogs, Donuts, and Donate Life event here in Northern Nevada with the Donor Network. I got to say, our team did such an amazing job that we actually were recognized at the agency as registering the most new registered owners for donating life in the state of Nevada. Very proud of them for that. And we had a little ceremony, and they gave us a plaque. But that was done at every institution. So I was just so proud of the way they were able to get out there, help, and sign up people for such a very important thing. We participated in the second annual First Responders Day at Bohatch Elementary. If some of you may know, Officer Bohatch was killed years ago from the Reno Police Department, and they named the school after him, and his daughter actually worked for us as a student worker. And so it's really close to our heart. We continue to talk about alcohol awareness events. And then our community out there doing the self-defense at Safe Embrace Women's Night at the Women's Shelter and the Discovery Museum Ladies' Night. Going out there, holding those events in those areas, not having to come to us, we'll go to them, and it works out so well for us. And you can see some of our great pictures down below. So some of the highlights from our emergency management side. This is Dr. Amanda Wins and her team. So she planned and hosted the first ever NC-wide tabletop exercise. I believe some of you were there for that. For all leadership and all institutions, including the FEMA course for the executive leadership, I was there as well. They always put on a phenomenal course. Invitational speaker at the inaugural Region 9 International Association of Emergency Managers. I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but the federal government loves these really, really long sentences to describe stuff. So she is an invited speaker to that. Super proud of her for that. They built, conducted the first interprofessional care tabletop exercise with over 251 students from public health and nursing with facilitators from local response agencies. And it's going to now become an annual requirement for the accreditation process. Acted as the lead emergency operations center evaluator for the Reno Tahoe International full-scale exercise. So they have to complete an exercise every 3 years. She was taking lead on that while they were doing that exercise. So some of the highlights from her division, which is our division as well. Matt Williams, Organization Resilience Coordinator, completed the FEMA Advanced Academy August 19th. And you see a picture there. And then Jennifer Delaney, Organizational Resilience Training and Exercise Coordinator, completed her FEMA Basic Academy the 25th. So they're not just staying stagnant. They're continuing to learn, to continue to serve our community every day. And then they provided 12, these classes are great, the 12 Prepared Not Scared classes at institutional sites throughout Northern Nevada. And they're three-hour classes, and they are the most engaging three-hour classes I think I've ever seen. Minus mine, of course. I mean, that's... So some of our department highlights from the internal side, right? So we got new members to the team. Marisol, she's our research administrator. She's our grant writer. And so we have a partnership with Sponsor Projects where we each kick in some money. She works for us sometimes. She works for them. It benefits us all. Benefits every single one of the Northern Nevada institutions because all that money is going to them as well. Austin Franks, he's our application specialist for OIT. I'm sure you can imagine our OIT is very different from anyone else's just because of all the different systems that we use. So he is fantastic at doing the OIT for us. And then we just hired Dayla Gibson as our victim services coordinator. She comes with many, many years of experience, and she really hit the ground running. We had two officers graduate from the Northern Nevada Law Enforcement Academy in June. You can see them down there, Ray and Jorge. They, kind of just like Chief Garcia was saying, we already have a regional. That's all we have up here is regional, so you have to send them to that. And so we have two in there right now. We got two that just came out. So we continue to put people in the academy as well. Department internships, our social worker, Angel, just started with us 2 weeks ago. He's hit the ground running, former Marine, so I must say I really enjoy his company. And he really is coming into this because he wants to work on the veteran side when we talk about that social work. And I'm super proud. I think he's going to do great things. And then our community relations, like I mentioned before, was President Stanfield. Sergeant Wilson is now, he left us. He came to me with his head sulked and low, and he said, I've been offered a job as the emergency director of Story County. And I said, well, how can I say no? You can't go do that. He is now the emergency manager of Story County, which is amazing, but he's still a reserve officer for us. So it's a benefit for both of us. Sergeant Olson, who's standing back there, he just completed the certified motor training officer program. So this now means he can instruct and he can help and he can train from start to finish any motor officer they have, because we currently have two motor officers. And then Officer Mike Thompson, he actually completed the basic course and they're going to start their training together. Motorcycle training is one of the hardest trainings that we have in the police world. It's harder than the SWAT school. Why do I say that? Because I've been to both. And motorcycle training is one of the hardest things you can do because it's not just riding. It's very technical. We continue to our membership with the Nevada Sheriffs and Chiefs Association, so we've been going and reaching out. And one of the great things about working in Northern Nevada is every county has some sort of NC property from somebody doing something. So those connections that I can make with those sheriffs and those chiefs locally are huge for us because it helps us. We can't always be there, but they can. And so they're fantastic at helping us out. And then lastly, we maintain compliance with NIBRS. NIBRS is a new report writing model from the federal government. And if you actually go on to nevadacrimestats.nevada.gov, you can find us listed. You click on us, and it'll show you the crime that we've reported to them. And so it's a really great way for average citizen to see what's going on in every jurisdiction in the state of Nevada. It's a really, really big lift. And then lastly is our amazing canines, which I always throw in there because everyone seems to love our canines. With that, I am finished.
Thank you very much. A wonderful presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Do we have any questions? Regent Aristotle.
Thank you, Chairman Michael. Well done. Very well done.
Thank you, sir.
A couple questions for you. What is the university, what is the police presence on the new University of Nevada, Reno, Lake Tahoe?
We are up there three times a week minimum, but we also have staffing overnight from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. They're staffing up there every single night.
Thank you. And just for both you and Chief Garcia, whenever there's something that happens on the campuses, regardless the severity of it, receiving those region alerts is imperative, at least for myself and others, because with social media,
absolutely,
we're inundated with family members or students or faculty saying, why is this going on campus? We've heard nothing about it, but I'm receiving photos of the accident of the crime scene on Instagram. Why haven't we received any notification?
So we've been working very closely with Marcom, Scott Walquist, Carrie Garcia, the fantastic team over there, and they are really helping us make sure we push that information out. Yes, sir.
Regent Brown.
Thank you, Chair. Regent Brown, for the record. I actually just wanted to say, I said this the last time I was at the system office and you gave a presentation. I really do appreciate how community forward you are and engaging. I think that is really important, that the police be a part of the community and not just there to solve problems. I think the more you give, the more you present and the more that you, are engaged in the different campuses, I think that you're changing the narrative. And I just wanted to say again on the record that I really do appreciate it.
If I may, I greatly appreciate that. I've always said this, we don't hire for anything. We hire for attitude, and then we train you for aptitude. The most important thing within our organization is our culture. If we don't have a strong culture, we can't go out and help the citizens that we patrol every single day. And so our officers are absolutely embedded with everything that we do, and I'm super proud of them for that. But thank you so much for that comment.
And just as like a quick follow-up, like that approach comes from leadership. So it wasn't me. I wasn't on the board. But when they chose to hire you, they made the right choice. And, well, you are the right leader for this job.
I greatly appreciate that.
I just wanted to let you know that I recognize it. I see it. And I see the cultures on the campuses up here. And so I just wanted to say thank you.
I would not be anywhere without my team. So thank you very much.
Regent Downs.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. Regent Downs for the record. So in your 29,495 contacts, now those could also be just talking with students on campus, right, and everything. How many are calls, and I'm curious also in this situation, how many calls do our officers respond to that are for the community versus for the institutions?
So I would have to literally pull that out for you. So okay. Much like Southern Command, we have interlocal agreements. But like here's a great example. Last night, individual decided to plow into the roundabout. He hit that. Our officer showed up, started doing what needed to be done, when suddenly another car came down, barreling down, and actually totaled the Reno Police Department car.
Oh,
wow. So we worked no one was injured, but we worked very closely with them because we understand here in Northern Nevada, we, nor Reno, nor Washington, nor Sparks, no one can do anything by themselves. Everything has to be as a team. And so we work very closely with them. If you would like that information, I'll be more than happy to provide it. It's just going to take time to parse it all out.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. President Delphi.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. Kyle Delphi, Western Nevada College. I just want to give a shout out and thank you to Chief James and his crew for keeping our campus safe. One of the things you'll hear me talk about in metrics tomorrow is I don't think about safety, and I don't want to have to think about safety, but then I see a headline and then I think about safety. But the work that you've shown here and that Chief Garcia showed down south shows the community piece of it, so that I don't have to think about it every day because it's already embedded in our culture. And I appreciate things like the security report and the bicycles and the cars on campus and all of that. We have a small campus without a lot of the things some of the other presidents do, like housing and athletics, but it's still a campus we need to keep safe. So I appreciate that, and I want to let the board know that safety is one of those things that I'm trying to put on the top of our list everywhere, even when I consider that we have a very safe campus. We can never take our eye off that ball, and so I appreciate these reports. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions?
Yes, sir. Chairman.
Yes, Regent Brooks. I'm sorry, Regent Boylan.
Yeah, okay. Well, when I grow up, I'll be like Regent Brooks, but right now I'm just me. Two things I had to say. First, thanks to both the chiefs. It's amazing stuff they're doing, and I'm impressed. I don't get impressed too easily, but I'm quite impressed with everything they're doing for a university and college system. I agree with what Regent Arascada said, and I appreciate the information that's kicked out to us. And I've been having my hand up for so long, I think I forgot my first question. What was it I was going to say? I'll just say thanks to these gentlemen and all the dogs and humans that are with them. We appreciate it. And security is always on my mind, so I really appreciate you, gentlemen. And women, sorry, all of you.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions? All right, thank you very much, Chief James.
Oh, quick question. Sorry. Chair McMichael?
Go ahead.
I remembered it now. The chief can put up the website, Nevada Crime. What was it? The Nevada Crime, you said it was at the bottom of your last...
It was. I would have to pull it back up. Hold on, let me give it a 19.
Okay, sorry.
There we go. Give me one second. Let me go back here.
Oh. I appreciate it.
There we go. nevadacrimestats.nv.gov.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Since there's no other questions, we will move on to item number 6. This is information only. NG Cybersecurity, Dr. Milkovich.
Yes, Ann Milkovich for the record. Thank you. So just bringing you a little update on cybersecurity information across ENSHE. And as you know, we are always working to protect university assets, ENSHE assets, and the wealth of sensitive information that we have possession of that's a target, a favorite target for hackers and tricksters. So I will give you some information about the things that are going on lately and some of the protections that we're working on. We are always working on it and always working to keep everything safe. So I don't want you to be worried about cybersecurity, but I do definitely want you to be very aware, because it's human awareness that's the first line of defense for all of us. So first of all, we've been working on standardizing annual penetration testing, often called pen testing. That's when we hire an agency to attempt to hack their way into the network or into the systems, to then see where they're able to get in, what they're able to get to, so that we can fix it and close that up. If you don't test your security, you don't really know how good it is. So we do that on an annual basis. That also helps us with cyber insurance, and it also helps us comply with GLBA, the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. So moving on to Gramm-Leach-Bliley, we coordinated and provided GLBA training for all of the institutions, and SCS paid for that. It's expensive, and we got a good deal by going in on it together, and it's important that everybody have GLBA training. That act dictates how we as a financial institution protect the data of our customers. We are a financial institution because we collect money and loan money to students. We are also looking into streamlining other training on behalf of the institutions. That's an area where we can achieve economies of scale on a number of things. And if we all need the same training, we can do it once, go through one contract process, et cetera, and help, again, get a better cost discount for the institutions. In terms of cyber liability insurance, we work closely with the System Administration Risk Management Office and risk management officers at the institutions, coordinating with them on meeting the requirements so that we qualify for cyber insurance, cyber liability insurance. And those requirements get tougher and tougher every year because, you know, insurance companies are not there to give away money. They're there to earn money. And so those requirements get more and more difficult, particularly with ransomware. There are some insurance companies that are just backing away from ransomware insurance at all. Some of the requirements that we work on that the insurance companies are very intent on right now, they don't like local administrative rights. When we say local, we mean on your laptop or desktop. That's sometimes a conflict in higher ed because researchers, for example, or educators want to be able to quickly install something on their machine in use for their class, for their research project, and if they don't have local rights, they can't do that. They have to go through a process. So we're always trying to balance the risk and the solutions to make sure that we can run the institutions, or we don't run them, but that the institutions can operate effectively and quickly while still trying to balance that with risk mitigation in order to qualify for cyber liability insurance. We are also using a portal provided by the insurance carrier where they scan our networks from the outside and then give us findings so that we can be always testing where there might be some vulnerabilities. Of course, we're always proactive about protecting against vulnerabilities, but again, if you don't test it, you don't know whether it's really working. You may have heard about one vulnerability that's made the news recently. That was the MoveIt file transfer vendor that was used by the National Student Clearinghouse and also some other companies that we are engaged with used that vendor, and they had a vulnerability in their software. So while we have to work on our vulnerabilities and also the vendors that we engage with, we need to make sure that they are protecting our data. But then those vendors engage their vendors. And so there's a cascading effect of different parties involved. So it's important that when we are working on contracts with outside vendors that will be handling our data in any way, shape, or form, that IT is involved early in the process so that we can get the requirements in place for how that data needs to be protected and handled. We always assist with the audits, currently Grant Thornton audits, so that occupies some of our time working on that. GLBA, again, updated some of their safeguard rules, which meant we had to re-comply with that and work with the audits to make sure that we are, again, complying with that. The best defense against cyber attacks is security awareness training for all the humans that work or live in ENCHI institutions. And I'll put a plug in that it really should be mandatory, and it's not always. It's very difficult to require employees or faculty to complete a certain amount of training. They have training that they have to do. This is one more. As you know, we all get burdened with more administrative work on top of, you know, I was hired to be a teacher, I was hired to be a researcher, and you're giving me all these administrivia that I have to work through. So I always advocate for the type that we use, that SCS uses, which is it's about between 2 to 5 minutes per month, every month, and within SCS, we enforce that. So our completion rate monthly is right about 85%. That excludes people who are on annual leave, people are on sick leave, maybe they missed it that month, but we follow through and say, you've got to complete it. We're trying to get that number up to 95% completion rate. I believe in doing it frequently and briefly. Some places do something like 2 hours every year, and I don't find that as effective because we're trying to break the muscle memory. Right? When you get an email and there's a link in there and it looks like it came from the president, the bad actors are very good at mimicking things to make it look like it comes from somebody you know. They can read the emails, they can find things on the website, they can put the logos in the email, they can imitate it very well. It's a link that says, click here, I need you to address this issue right away. And your habit is to click it. You know, you're going to do something with that because it looks like it came from somebody legitimate. So it's important that to break that muscle memory and that habit of going through your email so quickly. Most attacks are simple human trickery. They tricked you into doing something. It wasn't through the network. It wasn't through equipment. We think it's people who are programming algorithms and doing all kinds of things. It's not. It's just one human tricking another human. So I'm a strong advocate for brief but frequent. Monthly is great, a few minutes. And then one more plug for effective cybersecurity management across ENCHI and also effective IT management. It's a common problem throughout the IT industry and in higher ed in particular, where business decisions are made up front. Products are purchased, contracts are arranged, and IT doesn't get involved until kind of the tail end of the process. So we weren't able to make sure that the contract had the right language regarding data protections. We didn't know that this product was being purchased, and now suddenly it's an emergency to get it installed. Well, there are 6 other emergencies to get installed that also got purchased. So we're particularly dealing with kind of a surge in that kind of problem within SCS because we're serving multiple institutions who have multiple business units who are, you know, trying to solve multiple problems. And so we're not always brought in early enough. And then it's a problem because we have finite resources and there's unlimited demand for IT support and solutions. So just a plea to all of the institutions and to everyone, please remember to get IT involved early so we can help protect the data, so we can help you choose products that will meet your needs and solve the issues you're trying to solve in the most cost-effective way possible, and so that we can be prepared to serve you best. So with that, I'm happy to field questions. I also have Chief Information Security Officer Thomas Daubert with me in the audience to help with any questions. And I'll just put a safe harbor statement up front that I can't get very specific about things in a public meeting because we can't reveal security issues or vulnerabilities in a public meeting. So I might need to defer some questions. Thank you.
Do we have any questions? Regent Brown.
Thank you so much. Regent Brown, for the record. So over the 8 months that I've been on this board, I've heard you say at least twice, I think three times, that monthly micro trainings are necessary, but it's hard to roll out and we don't have quite the implementation. What would you suggest that you have the ear of the president's? What would you suggest happen to beef up those numbers if, as our expert is saying, that this is an easy way for our ENCHI family to be helpful in the security?
Right. Thank you for the question, Ann Milkovich. I understand it is very hard to mandate things in higher education. We tend to like to sit in a circle and talk about how the rules make us feel more than demanding things be done. So I understand that. I've worked in higher education for 17 years now. Nevertheless, if you can enforce it and put out a campaign at the institution to help demonstrate why this is important, why it's only a few minutes out of your life, and it really does work, and then follow through. If nobody follows through to say, did you complete it? And you can get reports out of the training systems. And we're happy to collaborate on a common platform across all of ENCHI on behalf of the institutions for that. But you can get a report who's completed it and who hasn't. Certainly within SCS, it was very easy for me to say, you must do this. It's mandatory. And now I'm going to follow through. I want to know who didn't complete. And then I'm just going to send them a nice email. Hey, I saw your name on the naughty list. I'd really like to see your name on the other list. Could you go ahead and complete this? 3 minutes. And they do. But that's easy. I've got a group of, 80 people. We work closely together. We have good relationships. That's much easier than when you're dealing with a large institution. But it's really following through to say, I want your name on that list, not this list.
And I know it's not as, it's easier said than done, but if I've heard you say it a couple times and it is a priority, then mm-hmm. I'm hoping we can make it a priority as a system if we are choosing to keep this structure. But having said that, I actually have a question about security as a service. So I work in the tech space, and I know our organization has kind of gone to this model, and a lot of startups that I work with also use this model. And it's my understanding also that CSN has switched to this model. When I met with them, I learned that they were kind of the first higher ed institution to switch to a SaaS model, and they've even now been approached by a couple institutions in California and the city of Las Vegas to kind of mirror their structure. So I'm wondering, has SES considered this SaaS approach to security? And if we have, is there a way to weigh the expensive equipment, paying the CISOs, and having less of a systeminess, to quote our former acting chancellor, to the security approach?
We have considered and continually consider when should we outsource something, which is what we're talking about, outsourcing security or outsourcing any other service, and when should we not. And for any service that we work on, that's always a question. Is it more cost effective to outsource this or to insource it? And for us, in almost all cases, it is more cost-effective to pay a few employees than to pay contractors for us. And there's also a risk balance, because if you're outsourcing security as a practice, in some cases you're outsourcing the risk as well, but in other cases you're also losing control. So there are many criteria to balance when considering whether or not to outsource. Generally speaking, those elements of the business that are mission critical or high risk, generally not advisable for outsourcing. But every situation is different, every organization is different. And so, but that, yes, that's something that we're always considering.
I would be interested to see what the cost analysis would be, and then we could talk about the security analysis. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, just back of napkin numbers, you'd be saving potentially tens of thousands of dollars every month if we're taking into account equipment, upkeep, staffing, et cetera, et cetera. So I would be interested in maybe going down this path and exploring it, but obviously taking into account that, you know, every service, you mentioned it earlier, I wrote it down, you know, vendors have vulnerabilities. So the vendors we contract with currently, they have vulnerabilities. If we outsource to the entire system, they would have vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. But if there was a way to streamline and have one source instead of a myriad of humans plus different vendors, to me, that seems like there's more potential for breaches in that security vertical than outsourcing it into one thing. But I would just be interested in having a further conversation.
I would love to engage in that conversation with you. There are a lot of things to consider with that. And yeah, that would be a good conversation to have.
I appreciate it. Okay. Vice Chair Escada.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. Just two questions. How many employees or how many staff members are with SCS? And how many entities do you serve throughout the state of Nevada? Because I always like hearing that. I know there's a lot of them.
Okay. Thank you, Regent Arascata and Milkovich. So we have approximately 85 SCS employees. We serve, and I don't have exact numbers. They're available on our website. I don't have exact numbers, but I can give you some generalities. We serve all of the NSHE institutions, plus System Administration, Board of Regents. We serve numerous state agencies. We run the Nevada network for the state of Nevada, so that's NevadaNet. Department of Corrections is on that, so we provide video conferencing, distance education, and networking to the Department of Corrections, Department of Health and Human Services. There's a whole list of the agencies that we serve, too many for me to mention right now. We also have about 200 network nodes in the state of Nevada that are on the NevadaNet network. We are collaborating with OSINT of the Office of Science, Information, Innovation and Technology from the Governor's Office on broadband expansion in the state of Nevada. So we will be adding approximately 200 more nodes to NevadaNet as part of that broadband expansion. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions? I have one question. My question is, we have young students who maybe for the first time are getting ready to vote, coming up to another presidential election. Are we seeing an uptake in cyber misinformation directed towards students?
I don't have any statistics on that specifically, but I can say that voting years tend to see an increase in crime, protests, and cyber influence. And we've seen that in the past when there, you know, nation states or other threat actors who have particular interests in the outcome of an election will work to influence nefariously how that works. But I can't say specifically what might be targeted to students. Thank you for the question, Regent McMichael.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Do we have any other questions? Hearing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will now move on to item number 7, new business, information only. Do we have any new business? Hearing none, we will now move on to item number 8, public comment. Do we have any public comment from the meeting sites? Is there any public comment from Elko?
No, thank you.
Any public comment from Las Vegas?
There is no public comment in Las Vegas.
Do we have any public comment for TMCC? Hearing none. SCS, is there any public comment in the phone queue?
Not at this time.
Thank you. Having no public comment, this meeting is now adjourned.